And we have, of course, Morgan Reynolds with us from NoMoreGames.net. We'll continue that conversation about the deep state, shadow government on the other side. There's this new book out. It's called Aliens, the World's Leading Scientists on the Search for Extraterrestrial Life. Quantum physicist, another physicist, Jim Al-Khalili, debunks five popular alien myths. Among them, myth number one, aliens would eat us. Movies like The Blob and Critters imagine aliens harvesting humans for food, an unpleasant prospect, but it doesn't track with the science of nutrition, writes astrobiologist Lewis Dartnell. In order for aliens to get nourishment from eating us, their bodies would have to be capable of processing our molecules like amino acids and sugars, and that requires having a similar biochemistry, a long shot for a species that hails from a different world. Myth number two, aliens would breed with us. Both of this summer's extraterrestrial blockbusters, Alien Covenant and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, involve human-alien hybrids. But given that we can't even reproduce with our nearest evolutionary relative, the chimpanzee, it's overwhelmingly improbable we could do the same with aliens, according to Dartnell. So there you go, a couple of alien myths debunked. Hey, join Coast to Coast AM's George Norrie for dynamic discussions on paranormal phenomena, conspiracies, and all things unexplained, beyond belief. An upcoming episode, Wednesday, May the 10th, History of the Illuminati with the one and only Jim Mars. You can start enjoying episodes right now. To sign up, just visit beyondbelief.com. Shadow governments, the deep state, Morgan Reynolds, when Coast to Coast continues right after this. Welcome back. Richard Serrett sitting in the air chair tonight on Coast to Coast AM, coming to you from Coast's Toronto affiliate talk radio AM 640. And Morgan Reynolds is with us, nomoregames.net, the website. And we're talking about the deep state, the shadow government. When I think about shadow governments or the deep state, Morgan, I remember a British sitcom called Yes Minister. I don't know if you saw it. It was on the BBC. We got it here in Canada. And you had this... it sort of followed the travails of the ministerial career of this fellow who was at this fictional. It was called the Department of Administrative Affairs, and every time he tried to enact legislation or affect some departmental change, he was opposed at every turn by the British civil service. In particular, there was a permanent secretary, they were called, which was played by Sir Nigel Hawthorne, a great actor, and it was very funny. But to me, that really summed it up. What sort of elected representatives are up against whenever they try to do anything? They are up against these permanent secretaries, this permanent bureaucracy. Is that part of the deep state?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The definitions of the deep state vary. Some just limit it to the permanent bureaucracy. Others extend it to the financial powers in particular. And you got all these contractors, especially in the merchants of death, the whole that goes back to President Eisenhower's warning. But notice that some of this inertia is intended. So, for example, if you go into an agency, be it the military intelligence or regular civilian, you've got one statute law restrict establishing you. You've got a budget that is dependent on the legislative branch. And then you've got a host of regulations. Now, these regulations have some flexibility, but it, you know, like you're pointing out, right, there's a whole set of interests on, you know, on K Street in the Imperial Capital, right? you've got all kinds of lobbyists representing special interests that don't allow you to freely tamper. And then you've got, of course, the media as another major factor about can you do this quietly, or are you going to arouse a serious hostility in the public? So there's a series of natural infirmities here in terms of making things over. But a Trump, for example, got to say I'm disappointed. We knew it was a bit of a crapshoot, right? We all know what the major opponent was going to be, Hillary. But to me the main issue was I love the fact that he talked sense about Russia. Russia is not a real enemy, and this business about Rex Tillerson, by contrast, opens his mouth and says, well, Russia's got to give up Crimea. Well, are you kidding me? This guy was experienced as CEO of a worldwide power like ExxonMobil, right? He dealt with the Russian government. This is an absurd demand. Crimea is historically, it's the warm water port. It's historically part of Russia.
Be like asking the United States to give up Guam.
Right. Or hey, Puerto Rico's in the news going bankrupt. Yeah, the long-term possession or part, and the Crimean balloting might have been somewhat corrupt, but nobody really disputes 9 out of 10 Crimeans wanted their look to Russia, not the basically a traitor, I'd call him, appointed a puppet in the Ukraine. You know, he's just saying, this is nuts. And I can't accept the idea that this is just smart negotiating.
So this is the war party, the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about, not wanting the United States to have warm relations with Russia. I mean, it reminds me of when Eisenhower wanted to meet with Khrushchev. And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. what happens is Gary Francis Powers gets shot down in the U-2 spy plane, causes a huge embarrassment. The detente meeting is called off, and then some have speculated that's why they sent Oswald to Russia to give the Soviets the code number so that they could shoot the mm-hmm. U-2 plane down and scuttle the detente talks.
We certainly have some, it makes sense, and we have some superficial evidence at least to support that argument or hypothesis, right?
What would be so bad with the United States getting along with Russia?
Well, if you're Lockheed or Raytheon or Boeing or, right? And now the oil industry, on the other hand, I would say, come on, let's that would be fine with them. So you always have some conflicts in the power centers, these influence centers. But I did an article on my nomoregames.net just recently on the $6 trillion worth of spending in recent years on these wars. Now, every dollar is received by somebody, and they're therefore invested in this whole operation. And then I looked at the 90s in an earlier article, and you could see once the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, well, hey, we were waiting around for the peace dividend. It never really showed up, but the defense, DOD public spending eroded in actual dollar amounts, much less the inflation eating away. And then, oh my goodness, we were blessed by the gift that keeps on giving, 9/11, and turned a benign, relatively benign. You could have cut defense, in half. And but then it ran up, and of course the Defense Department is well known for its frugal spending.
Yes.
I mean Trump wants to shower him with another $1 billion a week. Okay, what are they going to do? You know, I mean, it doesn't almost matter. Yeah, they'll hire some more people, but is there a real effective plan? And it's very disappointing that, we're going to modernize, you know, we're going to junk all of our old nukes and build new ones. I mean, it's just a huge bonanza for the merchants of death.
Let's go to the phones, Morgan, if you're good for that. And on the wild card line, we've got Thomas in La Jolla, California. Thomas, good morning, good evening.
Hi, Richard. Thank you for taking my call. And Morgan Reynolds, it's an honor and a privilege to speak to you, sir. And my question, well, to use an example, there was a movie in the 1990s called Wag the Dog with Dustin Hoffman and Woody Harrelson. And it was about using military actions offshore as a diversion, as spectacle. In other words, it's for internal propaganda consumption within the United States. And I was reflecting on that. I was reminded of that with Syria. We launched 59 Tomahawk missiles. It was a $100 million fireworks display, and two news teams from Russia went to great pains to show that the airfield that was allegedly bombed was in use within 12 hours, full functional use of the runways, etc. So again, it's like a wag the dog theater, you know, for internal public consumption, and that these military wars are for internal propaganda public consumption within the United States. And I was wondering if you would comment on that.
Comes to mind right away is I've been seeing allegations, and I'm no expert on this, but that the ISIS videos with beheadings are professionally produced. And I'd say, hey, yeah, you know, this is all designed to outrage the American people, and it's just kind of like small 9/11s. And then what's President Trump? He, when he's justifying lobbing these missiles without much military effect, he's pleading about the babies, and you just got to wonder. Come on, is this a man or a woman? I mean, yes, it's a horrible thing, but it's kind of like another related point is, okay, you died of sarin gas. I mean, what exactly is the difference when you've been murdered by one device or another? I mean,
right, whether it's a barrel bomb or a chemical agent.
Yeah. But I agree absolutely with the caller that it's the main problem for government. The enemy really is, and the potential enemy is the people, right? You know, it goes back to Edward Bernays' 1928 book on propaganda, how to persuade everybody that the government's working on your behalf, and isn't this all? And the enemy, the fear card is just constant. I mean, I remember here a couple months ago, one of these Drudge Report articles about there's a hole in the sun. Oh, no, I got to worry about that, too. It's just, you know, the fear of the day.
Well, it's almost as if there's this plan to demoralize us so that we just throw in the towel and give up.
Yeah, although trust is at an all-time low now, that only, what was that, a Pew Research or some respected poll said that 22% of Americans now trust the government to do the right thing most of the time, if not all the time.
22%, that high. All right,
yeah,
let's go.
I know.
Let's go to
what are these people thinking, right?
Let's go to the wild card line again. And Ray is in Modesto, California. Ray, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. I just had a comment. You know, I know that there are nefarious elements to the deep state and people that will go to extreme measures, but I think, politically speaking, what Americans have to realize is this is just a government that allows special interests to have so much power. Some of what's happening might appear on the surface to be really evil, you know, but if you go down to the ground and you try to inspect how some of these political events are evolving, what you find is just people trying to support their families. You know, they have their narratives, of course, and justifications for what they're doing. You know, not really, I don't think there's a, you know, a room full of evil people with a Dr. Evil planning, you know, against the world. I think that this is just a government run by special interests. It's what the anti-federalists warned us about. What the anti-federalist sentiment was all about at the onset of this country. Our founders knew this could happen.
Ray, that you make an excellent point. It reminds me of Cliff Robertson's character in 3 Days of the Condor. In that final scene, and he's CIA, and Robert Redford is threatening to go to the New York Times and blow the whistle on the CIA for these dirty dealings. And Cliff Robertson says, "You idiot, don't you know what you're doing? Who do you think we're trying to get the oil for? You know, what do you think the people are going to do when they're freezing in the dark? They rely on us, right? So they may be thugs and gangsters, but there are thugs and gangsters." It's a valid point, Ray. What do you say, Morgan?
Well, I can't accept that as a general proposition. In the Middle East, we've spent trillions murdering people. And what are the Middle Eastern governments of various stripes going to do to make a living anyway? You know, they've got to rely on Western technology, et cetera, and they've got to sell oil.
It's not a justification, but what it does is it means that we're all implicated in this.
Well, yes and no. Of course, the public ultimately aroused definitely controls the government. The people outnumber the government by huge margins, etc. But people are not attentive. I mean, you could say we're shirking our duties as citizens and just expecting benefits. But the Donald tapped into something that the establishment was stunned by and is still, of course, trying to control him and having a good deal of success, it seems, thus far. So, you're right in the limit, but that's not the norm, right? It's mostly an inside baseball thing. It's just special interest groups, like the caller pointed out, is hugely important. All of us are hurt a little bit by every one of these privileges and immunities that are granted, and it's just... I can remember, you're on Capitol Hill, and every Monday, there's a whole bunch of new bills, and most of them are terrible.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like trying to stop the tide. You just
makes you root for a government shutdown.
Right. So... Yeah, so much of it comes down to these historical shifts that I was pointing out earlier. Woodrow Wilson is crucial, and the whole involvement of the U.S. in the Great War, of course, led to communists taking power, Nazis, fascists. It was the end of the almost free capitalism. And
Morgan, I got to jump in here. Apologies, yeah. My mea culpa to you, but we've got Al Green taking us into the break with Love and Happiness, sending that out to all of you. Back on the other side, more questions and comments from Morgan Reynolds, nomoregames.net, here on Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah. happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah. Oh, baby, love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
She may be the face I can't forget, a trace of pleasure or regret. Maybe my treasure or the price I have to pay. She may be the song that summer sings, maybe the chill that autumn brings, maybe 100 different things within the measure of a day.
To talk to Richard Serrett, call the Wildcard line at 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is 818-501-4721. To talk to Richard from east of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, toll-free, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Richard by calling their in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free, 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with your guest host, Richard Serrett.
And this is Jeff Lynn and his version of a beautiful song, She, which I'll send out to my mighty Aphrodite. And she is a force of nature. She's the kind of woman, when she gets up in the morning and when her feet hit the floor, somewhere the devil is saying, damn, she's up. All right, we will get back to our conversation with Morgan Reynolds, NoMoreGames.net, in just a moment as we continue to discuss the deep state and shadow governments, and we'll take your calls and comments as well. Just a reminder, coming up at the top of the hour, theoretical physicist Dr. Ben Tippett from the University of British Columbia will be along to tell us why time travel is in fact possible. He's done the math, and he says, it all adds up. A new report published in the journal Global Food Security, researchers are highlighting the impact that our ever-growing reliance on livestock is having on the environment. As mankind's appetite for meat grows, more and more farm animals are needed, which in turn produce increasing quantities of greenhouse gas emissions. Solving climate change, it seems, is going to necessitate quite a serious reduction in the amount of livestock being kept worldwide. One solution, the researchers argue, is to substitute traditional meats with alternatives such as edible insects or even lab-grown meat that can be produced without killing any animals at all. Insects are actually quite a common delicacy in many parts of the world and are particularly nutritious pound for pound compared to other types of meat. I actually had occasion to eat a scorpion once, a dried scorpion. Without the stinger attached, of course. I prefer my scorpions without the stinger. Hey, George Norrie is coming to the historic Everett Theater in Everett, Washington. That's happening July the 29th, 5 p.m. It's going to be a live stage show. He'll interview some of today's brightest experts in the world of ufology, paranormal, the economy, music, conspiracy, all things unexplained. A three-hour stage show consisting of interviews combined with video, music, and singing. For more information or to order tickets, go to coasttocoastam.com and click George in the menu. That's George Norrie at the Everett Theater in Everett, Washington, July 29th. Morgan Reynolds, NoMoreGames.net, and the Deep State, when Coast to Coast AM continues in moments. We are here again with Morgan Reynolds. NoMoreGames.net is his website. I remember a quote that was attributed to Vladimir Lenin. of course, the supreme leader of the Soviet Union, the leader of the Russian Revolution. And he said, a man is at the wheel and he seems to lead it, but the car does not drive in the desired direction. He seemed to be saying, here I am. I'm the supreme leader of the Soviet Union. But I'm really, I suspect, not in control. He seemed to be alluding to a shadow government. So this idea of a shadow government is not peculiar to the United States. Every country, I'm guessing, has to deal with this in one way or the other. Would you agree, Morgan?
Yes. But, Richard, I would suspect that Lenin was talking about his disappointment with the economy, with the communists taking over, because he believed we will just run it like the post office, which is so efficient. In other words, he didn't have the foggiest idea about what economics is and understanding how an economy works.
You mean supply management doesn't work, Morgan?
And, you know, the Germans basically smuggled him via a train into Russia to stop the war for the Germans on the Eastern Front. And it worked with disastrous long-run consequences. One of the smartest things that Lenin said, however, very insightful when it comes to 9/11 or conspiracies in general, you know, we shall control the opposition by owning it.
Yes, that is true. Let's say hello to, on the international line, Jim is right here in Toronto. Jim, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
Yeah, hi, Richard. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
All I can say, it's good to hear you again, even though I have a girl I know whose name is Aphrodite, and I keep telling her, move over, Aphrodite, I'm coming to your place. Stop pretending to be Richard Surrett and so on. So you better register it. It's a trademark infringement, Richard, sooner or later down the road. She says that. So you're famous and well-known, Richard, so don't give yourself any remarks that may, in fact, keep you down. Nevertheless, I had the pleasure to go to the NERI conference, and I tried to bring up a couple of questions. I've got a big question for Mr. Reynolds, just like the old Evans and Novak program. The big question will come in a minute, but I'll make it quite clear. A couple of other points. Morgan was dead on in regards to Osama bin Laden, but Morgan also remembers this, as do you, Richard. Where's the weapon of mass destruction and the $1 trillion spent in Iraq? And number two, and more importantly, for the Reynolds, isn't it interesting, Morgan? Is Morgan there? Are you there, Morgan?
He's listening. Yes.
Okay. Victoria Nuland, who's recently departed the State Department. What a coincidence. Her husband worked at Monsanto. All the nonsense that went on in the Ukraine. I'm not defending the Russian government. The Soviet Union was to be feared. Modern-day Russia with an authoritarian leader and a sidekick, Medvedev, Putin, not a chance. 140 million, demographically shrinking. Morgan, this is McCain. This is Lindsey Graham, or as he's nicknamed, Grahamnesty, and the others. But Victoria Nuland departs the scene, her husband, the whole GMO issue. And again, is it conspiratorial? It may be. Now, again, you'll have to comment on that before I get off the line. But here's the big question for Morgan Reynolds, and this is under his particular discipline. Will there or will there not be? I couldn't ask it of George Nuri here when he was in Toronto. But Morgan, I'm serious about this. Will there be some attempt by the military-industrial complex, the powers that be, the bureaucrats in Washington, in the end, and you've heard this before, will eventually the United States have to adopt, like other nations, a national VAT, but with the precursor here that we'll have a referendum and we'll try to cut taxes in other areas, you know, make it so that it'll accommodate the American people. A value-added tax, Morgan, because that, Mr. Reynolds, will bring in about $1 trillion a year, and that could solve the problem of the mighty empire here. And again, I'm just sitting back and watching all this from a distance here in Toronto, like Richard and the rest. So I'll leave it at that, and I'll listen to you off air. Fair enough?
All right. Good question, Jim. Thank you for checking in. So a value-added tax, would be part of sort of a protectionist trade policy in order to raise huge revenues.
No, it won't happen. The federal government has been able to collect about 20% of gross domestic product annually. And I don't think the American people, by any subterfuge, the VAT is especially well hidden, but the impact would be tremendous, as Jim suggests. And I don't think it's going to go down. And the problem is, of course, that they keep borrowing. They got a spending problem. They spend 24% of GDP. And with all these boomers retiring, of course, non-counted liabilities for the welfare state are just going to outgrow. So I just put out an article on nomoregames.net and lourockwell.com about the math leads to default. Ultimately, the government's not going to be able to pay its bills unless the Federal Reserve simply buys all the debt and adds zeros and zeros and zeros until the money is worthless. That's a more disastrous than a hard default, where you say to all the bondholders and T-bill holders that either I'm going to stiff you, I can't service these debts any longer, or part payment. In other words, it's a bankruptcy situation. That's what the state of Illinois, the public school for Chicago, Cook County, et cetera.
Stockton, California, Detroit.
And you know what boils me is that nobody's responsible. You know, there's ordinary turnover in elective office, et cetera, and nobody takes responsibility. Ultimately, we're going off the fiscal cliff. And the VAT, I don't think it's going to be adopted. They'd have to sell it by saying, we're going to relieve your personal income taxes, which is, you know, the lower half of the income distribution doesn't pay any now. So it's a rock and a hard place. And
wouldn't a lot of the exporters, though, coming into the United States, wouldn't they just absorb that?
The exporters?
Well, trading with the United States, let's say Mexico sending cars into the United States, wouldn't they just absorb that?
Well, if they're sold you're talking about domestic producers with Mexican plants and, you know, the maquiladoras and whatnot. Monterrey is a huge manufacturing area. Well, they get forgiveness where, you know, businesses ordinarily don't pay sales taxes on inputs, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's sales taxes are collected at the retail level, the so-called final sale.
Well, one of the arguments, though, against, you know, the protectionist policy is that the consumer will pay because it'll drive the cost of imports up. But I mean, if you look at, for example, let's say a car coming into the United States that was made in Mexico, it's no cheaper. It's no cheaper now.
Well, presumably it's less costly to produce there, so it's a matter of profit. Quite often these small cars can't be produced profitably, at least in unionized plants. That's a very competitive market, and the margins are just very narrow. On the other hand, you know, the big vehicles, the pickup trucks, the bigger SUVs, well, nearly any SUV, high profit margins, right? That's why the industry is flourishing, although it's finally over now. I mean, sales are going down at about a 4% clip per month.
Abraham Lincoln was a big fan of tariffs.
Lincoln? Well, now let's go back. Adam Smith was a very wise Scottish philosopher and economist. And he said, in effect, hey, you know what government does? They like to protect producers, but to hell with the consumers, right? Consumer interests are basically unrepresented in the political game. And what you're doing, protectionism provides a quasi-monopoly position for domestic producers or a producer. And is that a good way to run an economy? No. You know, it's Bella Caroli, the famous gymnastics coach, said, no competition, no progress. life isn't supposed to be easy for the producers.
Right, except do you produce anything? You don't produce anything anymore. That's the problem. Let's go to the wild card line. A lot of wild card callers tonight, and it's Noel in Riverside, California. Everyone's checking in from California tonight. Noel, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good morning. Thank you, Richard and guests. What I wanted to say is also about Woodrow Wilson. He had a quote that he said, since he'd been in office, it's obvious there's a dark force around listening to everyone, and no one dares say anything in condemnation about them. So I don't know if this is a long bloodline or if they carry on. And also, two major mistakes that I see that happened is letting the corporate interest take over the news media and not eliminating voting machines that are always being easily rigged, because the people here are smart. Like, we didn't vote, you know, Bush in, and, you know, Clinton got more votes, but, you know, they have a way of rigging all this. We aren't on top of these two major things, and now it's almost out of control. And the suppression of energy, so like Tesla, like they keep that under wraps so all these big people can make money. But, you know, to me, all in all, I think that the good news is God, no matter what, God is in control. Jesus said, remember, I told you these things will happen, and the just shall live by faith. So I think we just have to, you know, stay and live godly and trust God in this day and age. Thank you, Richard. God
bless. All right, God bless, Noel. Well, the second coming aside for a moment, until we get there, we thought with Trump we had the ultimate disruptor and he was going to drain the swamp, but the swamp, it appears, at least for now, is draining him. So what chance is there then of turning this thing around?
Back up, Noel, make one comment. Woodrow Wilson, to expand on this, he was a professor of political science at Princeton, Ivy League. He was a J.P. Morgan, House of Morgan guy. You know how the big money looks around like this Macron in France. They pick a pretty boy and make him into basically a figurehead. But
yeah, about as establishment as you can get.
It's what?
About as establishment as you can get.
It's right. That's right. And Woodrow Wilson was disastrous. But this points to this whole network. It's like my oldest son. He wanted at least one of his two children to go in an Ivy League school. And this networking and the money and easy access, or more likely access, to power and money.
There you go. All right. Clark is in Meridian, Mississippi, east of the Rockies. Clark, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Yes, good morning to y'all. You know, I just want to direct this question at the Democratic Party. They gave $150 billion to Iran, and I hear on the news that Iran wants to knock Israel off the map. Well, you know, the Democrats are knocking Russia. Well, let me tell you this, and I guess you could call this a catch-22. Back when Stalin, Trotsky, and Lenin were in power, they were commissar Jews, and they killed anywhere from 20 to 68 million in the gulags of Russia, and 70% of the commandants of the gulags of Russia were rabbi Jews. And, you know, I just want to ask that question to the Democratic Party. Do they know their past history, or do they know what the heck they're doing? And y'all have a good day. Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll let the Democratic Party answer that one, I guess, on their own time. Let's see.
Hey, but,
Hunter,
Richard,
you want to jump in on that? Okay.
About Iran.
Sure.
Iran, this idea of going to Tehran and being real men. You know how big Iran is? It's
100 million people. 100 million people.
It's 636,000 square miles. Lots of mountains. They got desert. They got jungle. But it's very mountainous. And the idea that's what is it? 3.5 times the size of California. It's 2.5 times the. It's a huge place. You know, and Iran's ancient civilization, et cetera. And what has Iran done? It hasn't invaded anybody. The U.S. can't say that. In a couple of centuries, they support Hezbollah, you know, okay, in Lebanon, which Israel doesn't like, et cetera. But the idea that Iran is a big menace is nonsense. But, and, of course, the U.S. has destroyed Iraq. And we're big allies with Saudi Arabia, you know, is an enemy of Iran. Well, Iran is the big mop. It's kind of like England trying to restrain Germany from being the dominant power on the continent in Europe. You know, that's not
which brings us to Syria, because that's what's going on in Syria. It's not a civil war. It's a proxy war between the Saudis and Iran.
Yes, and of course we got, I mean, that's, how many players do you have there in Syria, like 12? You need a scorecard to try and figure this out, right? I mean, it's just, oh, Lord, what a mess. And Donald had it right when he was a candidate. Now he doesn't have it right as the president, right, about just don't mess with these places.
Who is the Colonel House in the Trump White House, as best as you can figure? Who is Trump's Colonel House?
Yeah, I think we're sorting that out, aren't we, in terms of who's going to really have his ear. I don't know about this claim that Jared Kushner is, you know, Ivanka's husband. That kind of came and went. Will McMaster or Mattis... It's hard to figure out at this point. I don't think they know. And you actually have Mike Pence making foreign policy pronouncements.
I got to jump in, Morgan. We gotta say so long for now. Great talking to you. Thanks for hanging out.
Hey, thank you, Richard.
Josh Stone, Right to Be Wrong. On the other side, Professor Ben Tippett, why time travel is possible. Time travel to the past. It's possible. The math adds up. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM.
I'm feeling weak.